Dehumanization is not only carried by words, it is carried by systems, by the structures we build to organize, measure, and control human life. Once someone is defined as less than human, institutions know exactly what to do with them. And the chilling truth is, the system does not need hatred to function. It only needs compliance. Numbers are the first form of distance. Statistics reduce lives to percentages, bodies to tallies, suffering to data points. 1,000 deaths become collateral damage. 1 million displaced people become a migration flow. Each digit erases the story behind it, until only the total remains. And totals do not ask for empathy. Bureaucracy is the second form of distance. The file, the form, the case number, all designed to simplify complexity. But in the process, they strip people of their faces. The clerk stamping a document never meets the person who will be denied entry. The administrator calculating budgets never sees the families who will go hungry. Paperwork allows cruelty without confrontation. Uniforms are another layer of distance. They transform individuals into roles, into representatives of the system. The guard is not a man with doubts. He is the officer. The soldier is not a woman with a family. She is the enforcer. Uniforms make it easier to obey, easier to command, easier to forget that the actions taken still come from human hands. Technology magnifies this distance. A drone operator thousands of miles away does not see a child playing in the courtyard. He sees coordinates on a screen. A social media moderator does not see grief in a photograph. She sees violating content flagged for removal. Interfaces flatten the world until all that remains are targets and tasks. The machine becomes a filter, absorbing the human weight of every decision. The terrifying thing about systems is that they feel neutral. No one thinks of themselves as cruel when filling out a form, or clicking approve, or pressing a button. The work feels abstract, procedural, even mundane. But abstraction is the point. It cushions the conscience, creating just enough space to let harm unfold without resistance. Think of Hannah Arendt's phrase, "the banality of evil." What she saw in the trial of Adolf Eichmann was not a monster, but a bureaucrat, a man who organized trains with chilling efficiency, who spoke in the language of logistics, who insisted he was just following orders. Evil, she argued, does not always roar. Often, it files paperwork. Distance doesn't only protect perpetrators, it also numbs bystanders. When cruelty is described in abstract terms, as in, when it becomes a chart, a policy, a number, we feel less urgency to act. We read of suffering as if it were weather, something unfortunate, but outside our control. Systems teach us to accept the unacceptable by making it sound inevitable. Even compassion can be corralled by systems. Charity campaigns use statistics to mobilize sympathy, but in doing so, they risk turning people into cases rather than individuals. Feed one child for $1 a day. The face is there, but it becomes interchangeable with thousands of others. The appeal works, but it also reinforces the idea that a life can be measured in units. We rarely question the language of systems because it sounds professional. Resource allocation, efficiency, security measures. These phrases strip away the violence that often lies beneath them. The softer the wording, the harsher the policy can be. It is a paradox we have learned to accept. And once we accept the system, we no longer see the people it erases. The detained migrant becomes a case file. The evicted tenant becomes non-compliant. The laid-off worker becomes excess labor. Each one disappears behind the wall of terminology that feels rational, even necessary. But necessity is a mask. This is the hidden genius of distance. It allows cruelty to scale. One person insulting another is ugly but limited. A system labeling thousands of people as illegal can transform an entire society's perception overnight. Distance makes it possible for harm to be multiplied without anyone feeling directly responsible. And when responsibility is scattered, no one feels guilty. The guard blames the supervisor. The supervisor blames the policy. The policy blames the government. And the government blames the will of the people. By the end, no one owns the violence, even as everyone participates in it. But systems do not emerge fully formed. They are built piece by piece, policy by policy, word by word. And once built, they are rarely questioned, because they look like infrastructure rather than ideology. Bridges, roads, schools, we see these as neutral. So too with detention centers, surveillance systems, refugee camps. They blend into the landscape until cruelty itself becomes invisible. To recognize dehumanization in systems, we must learn to see past their neutrality, to ask who benefits and who suffers, to ask whose humanity is being recognized and whose is being ignored. Because no matter how abstract the system, the consequences are always real. And if we fail to ask these questions, the distance grows until no one remembers there were people at the center of it all. Consider how language inside systems acts like camouflage. A military strike is recorded as a surgical operation. Mass surveillance is reframed as data collection. Job cuts are explained as streamlining. These words dull the edges, making the intolerable appear routine. And once routine takes over, resistance feels like disruption rather than necessity. Even the architecture of systems contributes to distance. Tall fences, locked doors, endless corridors. Spaces designed not just to contain, but to conceal. When people are out of sight, they are easier to forget. And forgetting is the first step to allowing harm to continue unchallenged. The design of the system becomes part of the dehumanization. Technology sharpens this concealment further. Algorithms make decisions without faces. A credit score determines access to housing. A predictive policing system decides which neighborhoods deserve heavier patrols. The human hand is hidden behind the screen, but the impact is no less real. In fact, it may be more dangerous because the harm comes wrapped in the authority of objectivity. Once distance takes hold, empathy shrinks. We stop seeing individuals and start seeing patterns, charts, graphs. 1,000 refugees at the border become a security risk, not 1,000 stories of flight and survival. A rise in unemployment becomes an economic trend, not a wave of families struggling to eat. The data may be accurate, but accuracy without humanity is not truth. The further we are from suffering, the easier it becomes to rationalize it. Distance whispers, it's not your problem. Distance whispers, someone else will handle it. And when enough people listen, the system functions smoothly, without interruption, without dissent. The gears turn, indifferent to the lives being crushed inside. The tragedy is that systems rarely see themselves as cruel. They see themselves as efficient, as necessary, as serving a greater good. The immigration officer stamping denied does not think of himself as an agent of suffering. He thinks of himself as maintaining order. The corporate executive cutting jobs frames it as protecting shareholders. Cruelty cloaks itself in duty. And the more layers of duty we add, the harder it becomes to trace responsibility back to a single person. That's the genius and the horror of distance. It creates a diffusion of accountability where no one feels guilty because everyone is simply doing their part. But when everyone is only doing their part, atrocities become possible without anyone ever calling themselves perpetrators. History reminds us of this again and again. Genocides, mass displacements, forced sterilizations, all carried out through offices, forums, committees, signatures, not just through fists and guns, but through stamps and files. The horror is not only in the violence itself, but in how ordinary the process looked while it was unfolding. And still, this ordinariness is not confined to history. Look around. Detention centers framed as processing facilities. Sweatshops described as supply chains. Prisons swelling with bodies under the banner of public safety. Each example reveals the same pattern. The more neutral the name, the harsher the reality it conceals. Distance also reshapes those within the system. When you perform a task long enough, you begin to see only the task, not the people it affects. The guard becomes efficient. The administrator becomes meticulous. The cruelty doesn't disappear. It just becomes invisible to those carrying it out. And the invisibility is the perfect soil for harm to grow. This is why cruelty often looks so calm. Why atrocities can be carried out by people who go home, kiss their children, water their gardens. Because distance creates compartments. One part of life feels utterly normal, while another part carries out or enables violence. And as long as the compartment stays sealed, the contradiction never has to be faced. But contradictions leak. The system may offer distance, but it cannot erase the humanity of those inside it forever. Whistleblowers, resistors, those who refuse to sign or stamp. These are the cracks where conscience breaks through. They remind us that distance is a design, not a destiny, and designs can be disrupted. Recognizing this design is the first act of resistance, asking, who is being hidden here? Who disappears behind the statistics? Who suffers behind the policies? Such questions slow the gears, force a pause, create a gap where empathy can return. And empathy, once reintroduced, disrupts the smooth functioning of cruelty. The danger, of course, is that systems thrive on speed. They do not want pauses. They run best when no one asks questions, when no one interrupts. That's why those who resist are so often punished, not because they are wrong, but because they disrupt the efficiency of dehumanization. And inefficiency in a cruel system is the closest thing to justice. So as we leave this segment, remember this: dehumanization doesn't always look like violence in the streets. Sometimes it looks like paperwork. Sometimes it looks like policy. Sometimes it looks like an Excel file. Systems of distance don't remove our responsibility. They only disguise it. And unless we learn to see through the disguise, we will mistake cruelty for order.